Hi, Dan.
Hello, Jason.
I had to delay our call briefly because I was, and you know how this is, right? I was in the middle of trying to figure out, I was solving a problem, basically, and it was sort of I didn't want to abandon it because then I would have to start again. And as it was AppleScript related, as so many of my problems are. But I think
also often the problem and the solution.
You know, I think people sometimes get confused the tools you know versus the tools you like, and they think, oh well, you use it so you like it, and it's like I don't know if I like it. I like what it lets me do. If I knew something else, that would probably be better. But for now, like I wouldn't be. There's all this talk about like, oh no, it's gonna. I wrote about it this week. AppleScript and Automator are probably going to go away at some point. And what will the new automation be? And will the new Mac apps that come from iOS be able to talk to the old ones? And will they have separate automation systems and all that? And I just kept saying to myself, like, I just want there to be one. I am happy to learn something else. AppleScript does not delight me, especially when I have those moments when I have a list of files and I literally just need to say, sort these by date. It doesn't do that.
It's not that AppleScript was ever brilliant as far as substance of it, but the fact of its existence and the fact of all the stuff that it could touch and let you do, like the system level scripting stuff, that was, I think, what was the real impact of it.
Well, I think the other thing about it that is good, and I will say this as a non-programmer, is the fact that it is a meta English language syntax is helpful. Not that I didn't learn. I mean, I learned to program in BASIC, and BASIC was also, the idea there was it was a meta English language system, and that is helpful at times because, like, I mean, the stuff I know in AppleScript is all like control flow stuff. It's like literally I just need a little bit of scripting to say, you know, get this, if this, then this, otherwise this. And like the script that I built that you use too, that is the like podcast audio formatting script thing that I did. In the end, all it's doing is building a bunch of shell commands and running a bunch of shell scripts or command line apps. But it's wrapped in AppleScript mostly because that was the easiest way for me to just sort of like throw up a dialog box and do some if then stuff. And the nice thing about AppleScript is you can sort of do, you know, if this, then this, and repeat with this. And I don't know other languages. I'm sure I could learn if forced, and I'm happy to do that if I have a need to do it. But for now, it's similar to how I was complaining about there's these stories that Adobe may be testing out. The idea of getting rid of the photography bundle, which is what I pay for, which is basically I get Photoshop for $110 a year. And I have all these people saying, oh, there's lots of other options out there. Here's a list of apps. It's like, yeah, I have all those apps. I have all those apps. And they're great. But I know how to use Photoshop. And $110 a year, I'd rather just pay to keep using Photoshop that I have known how to use for 25 years. But, you know, it's a similar thing, which is like, do not confuse this with my lack of knowledge of other tools or my realization that the tools I'm using in the case of AppleScript are not ideal. But I feel like this is a theme that we come back to on this podcast sometimes. It's like, if it's a tool that you can use to do your job and you know how to use it, you have to do something much more impressive. John Carradine just went off in the background.
I was surprised to hear him. I thought he was dead.
He lives on in my alert sounds. Anyway, the tool that's that you know and can use is often the right tool for the job, even if there are better tools. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, and so much stuff gets bogged down in the tools too, right? Like we talk about a lot about like writing tools, for example, and I think there are people who are like, if only I find the right writing tool, everything will be easy and flow out of me as though it is no effort at all. And so I will spend all my time looking at all the tools and trying to find the right tool. And it turns out that's the time you should be using to just do the work, and it doesn't really matter as much. Like, and there are tools, don't get me wrong, I love my tools, and if you took them away from me, I would be super annoyed about it.
Don't take my tools away.
Please don't take my tools. But like, you know, it's at the end of the day, searching through tools is kind of a trap, because it's just
a trap.
Indeed.
It's a tool
trap.
Thank you, Admiral.
That was from the late lamented crossover between Return of the Jedi and Home Improvement.
Yes. Return of the Tool Man.
But yeah, the whole thing where like people spend a lot of time futzing with stuff. I always remember years and years and years ago, some piece of time tracking software came out. And I thought it was really interesting, you know, is the thing that you, there's a lot of software like this now, but this was like a decade ago where like it just sort of automatically tracked which apps you use and sort of let you pull up metrics and stuff like that. And I remember sending it to our friend Merlin Mann, who of course was big into productivity software. And I sort of was like, oh, this is really interesting. What do you think about this? And he's like, I just don't know what you get, like what is useful about that information once you've collected it. And I sort of started, that was the point for me, which I started looking at things, I think, with a much more critical eye when it came to these kinds of tools, like all kinds of tools, was just like, is this something that just gives me more information that is not useful to me?
Yeah.
Or is this something that actually helps me do my job better? And so many things fall into that former category. It's one of the reasons I don't tend to switch up my tools that often, is because, like you just said about like Photoshop and the like, is like the time investment in switching to a new tool is not, you know, it comes with a penalty.
Yeah, it took me years to switch from GarageBand to Logic, not because I didn't know that Logic would be better. Yeah, you did it too. Because it's like, oh my God, I barely can clear enough time to edit a podcast for an hour and a half, and now you want me to spend like 9 hours trying to figure out how to edit a podcast?
Right. And the funny part there too is because like Logic is so close to GarageBand, right? Like that's not even that big a jump. Like there's more stuff and we identified things that made our jobs a lot easier, but like that's not even as much as going from Photoshop to a totally different photo program.
Right. Even though like Affinity Photo tries to smooth the way a little bit, but yeah, it's different. And I there's something in here, and I'm sure I've talked about it on a million podcasts before, but I'm always super wary of not a change, but I'm super wary of the hits that you take in terms of productivity that don't pay back with productivity.
Yeah,
I guess is exactly the way I would put it. And so that's why like Mike gives me a hard time. I was listening to Cortex the other day and Mike and Gray are talking about their themes for the year, and they're talking about their like their project management systems or their tool. They're like, their lives are a project, and they use project management systems to do it. And Mike cannot understand how I don't have a system. And I say, I say, I do have a system, but it's not a system that you would approve of, where I put things in calendars. And I do now have a couple different to-do lists. So I've moved down that path. And I also accept that as I age, I'm going to need more places to store my backup brain, because my actual brain, where I keep all my stuff right now, is not going to work as well 5 years from now as it does now, and that's going to keep going for my life. I get it. But at the same time, and this is something I think Merlin recoiled against when he was Mr. Productivity Guy, which is a lot of this stuff, you end up becoming an expert in productivity and not in doing your job. And I think I'm on the extreme end, where I'm really resistant of productivity boosting things, because I'm worried that you're going to end up being really great at making lists and not about your job and not your job. But it's a little bit like that too, where it's like, because even the best investment, like I talk about, like learning grep or learning a scripting language or switching to Logic from GarageBand or all these things, like even the best investment is hard to make the jump, because you know that, like, okay, this will save me over the next year 100 hours, but I have to find 20 hours to make this switch. It's like, I don't have 20 hours. And so you like, and that's for the stuff where you know you're very certain you're going to save time. And then some of this other stuff, you're like, will it help me?
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I mean, I think my system is probably a lot closer to your system than Mike and Gray's, for example. I mean, it's very cobbled together, and it doesn't have like a strong structure to it. And that's because I don't want to spend that time. Like, part of the big reason that a lot of my to-do list is in my inbox is because that's where things already are.
Right.
Like, stuff that I need to do comes into my inbox and in mail, and I'll just flag it and be like, yep, all right, whenever I need to look at things I need to do, I just look at my list of flag messages, which is very funny sometimes, because I realized recently, like a week or two ago, I had like 500 flag messages, and I went back, I was procrastinating about something else. I was like, why do I have so many flag messages? And I had searched back for something else in there and noticed that, like, A, they went back years and years, and B, a lot of them were like flagged iTunes store receipts, back when I used to expense apps at Macworld.
Oh.
And I just never unflagged, and there were literally like 100 of
them.
Sure. I was like, nope, those are all debt. So I like went through and unflagged everything and got it down to like 50 or something from 500. And
flag
I was like,
box zero you're working on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why I dug up at one point. I think I sent you, because I had flagged it as like, oh, this is something you should think about, was those title ideas for a writing podcast that we had discussed.
Oh, yeah.
Several years. It wasn't even that old. It turned out it was like 3 years old or something. But it was still pretty funny. It was like, oh yeah, I flagged that as a thing that we should.
Yeah, first thing you do is come up with the title of the podcast, then you come up with the podcast.
The most important thing. Anyways, there's a bunch of stuff in there that turned out it was worthless. And it's like, the good news was that it didn't impact my productivity having those there, because I kind of have like that last red marker in my head of like, oh, if I scroll below this flagged message, nothing else is really relevant.
Yeah.
But it's easy and lightweight, because I know I can quickly look at the items. I know that I can quickly add or remove items from it. And the information I need to do that task is usually in that email already. So I don't have to go to some other app or service to figure out like, oh, what did this mean when I wrote this down on my list, or where are the specs for that you know, writing gig, like what was that covering, what was that article supposed to cover. It's all in the email usually, for better or worse. So I don't spend a lot of time thinking about that kind of thing, because it to me, again, it is a trap. So I'm with you on that. I think the investment into tools is itself just like, People like tools. I don't want to fault anybody for that. Like, it's fun to play around with these things. That's why we do what we do.
And they can work, but I think that there's a line that you cross where you end up spending, and this, Mike and I have talked about it, and he agrees with me. I mean, he it works for him, and that's the key, is that everybody's absolutely different. But like, there is a line you cross where you are now more excited about productivity tools than you are about your work. And that's the danger zone for me, is like when you're like, oh, I've got 8 hours a day where I'm working, and I spend about 2 hours of it moving things around on my prioritization list. And it's like, you're not getting work done. Every second you stay in your prioritization system, you're not getting work done. I know it may help you do your work, and that's great, but always, for me, there's always a ticking clock in the back of my mind. It's like, the more I fiddle around with this stuff, the less work I'm doing. And it's just one of those things. So like, I should probably have learned JavaScript a million years ago, but there will come a time, perhaps on Apple's platforms, when or perhaps it'll be shell scripting, where I have a situation where on the new stuff, if the Marzipan apps come to the Mac and Shortcuts comes to the Mac at some point, maybe not this fall, but sometime, and it only does a do shell script action or an SSH action, something that gets you to the Mac command line. And AppleScript is a ghost, right? It's gone. And I'll be like, how do I do this now? Because I can't channel this through AppleScript. Once that happens, I will learn whatever I need to learn to do what I need to do. But right now, it's like, I don't need to learn that yet, so I'm not going to. Because
down the road.
And I don't, again, it's not that I'm a champion of this stuff, but it's like, I have figured out a way to cobble together, through various means, through shell scripts and command line apps and Apple scripts, and, you know, Automator plugins and things like that, a bunch of stuff that makes my job easier, and that's great. And this thing that I was working on before we started will help a little bit. I do have a slightly funny story. I'm not going to name names yet, but I sent an email. So there's a utility I use that I've literally used since college, so since the 90s. And this utility is still around. It's one of those, that small handful of like classic Mac apps and utilities that is still around 25, 30 years later. I've used it since college. Send them an email the other day. I said, this is the first time I've actually had a feature idea for you. It's like, I find that I am doing this thing where every time I want to use your utility, I'm going to sand off all the names, 'cause I don't want to give it away, but, I use this utility, it's great, but then there's this one circumstance when what I really need to do is use this utility with a hint based on some logic. Basically, like, I need you to go to this, and in my case, it's podcast related, so it's like, I need you to look in the I'm always doing this thing on a folder containing a logic project. I said, but I don't think your app will do that. Your app, like, does what it does by default, and I then do what I need to do to find the right place. And I was like, what if I could tell you? What if I could, like, you could fire off a script? I could say, why don't you fire off a script here? And my script will tell you where to go to my logic project that's active. And I got an email back that day that said, that's a great idea. Why don't we make it a hidden feature? I'll send you a build. And literally this morning, there was a build of this app with this feature in it. And I thought, well, I have to figure out how to actually write that script now, don't I?
Ah, the work is boomeranged right back to you.
It did. So now I have to do this thing where I have to find, and I figured it out, I think, just before we started talking, where it's like, how do you find the contents of folders in a folder, and then find the one that's the newest that contains, you know, a logic project? Like, it's not, you have to find a file in the Finder that is the most recent one of its kind, and then it's a thing. But I think I finally figured it out. And that is the AppleScript story, if ever there is one. Is I just know if I phrase this right, it'll work.
Yeah, that's the reason I could never figure out AppleScript, because it was too close to English. It was English and programming colliding, and my brain did not like that.
When I say it's like a meta-English language thing, that's actually what I'm saying, is that I think the big downside of AppleScript is that it's got, there are things that you think you should be able to phrase, and then the way you have to phrase it is not English. It's bananas. Right. In fact, I use Script Debugger, which is great. Like, AppleScript is not usable without Script Debugger, I would argue. One of the reasons being, so it's a third-party app that is a really good script development environment. One of the things it does is it'll show you like all the items that are in your script, all the data that's been received by your script when you run
nice.
It. And here's the best part. I'm selling this app now. The best part is, so much of what's confusing in AppleScript is like, can I get the modified date in seconds of this or whatever, you know, of this item from the Finder? And it's in your little list of variables and stuff off on the right, and you literally just click on it and drag it in, and it writes the crazy AppleScript thing that's like, first item of time of, you know, and there's parentheses and all these things. It's not English at all. And that was, for me, that's always been the stumbling block. It's like, how do I phrase it to get that? And with Script Debugger, you actually drag it in, and it goes, you phrase it like this. It's like, yes, that's what I need.
The hilarious part is, you sent me another script recently that is something that we use for metrics, listeners on an audio stream.
Yeah, we can see how many people are listening live to the Incomparable Relay when we're streaming
We had to make some changes based on some a bug, I guess, in one of the helper pieces of software we're using. But the funny part to me was, you know, I did spend a little while employed as a programmer many, many years ago.
Right.
And so, you know, I know how to debug stuff, and I know how to, like, sort of trace a problem, etc. And I was doing it in, like, because I just use the script editor on, you know, the built-in script editor. And so trying to do that, like, and figure out where things were going wrong is, to me, a hilarious thing, because I just put in, we have a lot of cases where something might fail out, and it was not giving error messages.
Yes.
And so I put in, like, things to write error messages, and because this feeds into an app that basically displays in your menu bar, the error messages eventually get passed through to the menu bar. So I added the menu bar just said, whoops, like a whole bunch.
Well, I mean, I had a try statement in, which, for people who know AppleScript, basically means, like, this is on error, basically. It's like, give this a try, and if it errors, then you have an on error. Which, if you don't do that, then the script just errors out sometimes. And in this case, the app was, there was a security, turns out that there was a plList item that needed to be set, oh boy, in the helper app that we were using, that Apple requires you to set if you're going to use certain kinds of information. It was hilarious. It's like, literally, Apple made a security profile change that broke this app, and they didn't know, and then they fixed it, and it's fixed now, which is great. But you know, my classic one, Dan, is with AppleScript, you just set beeps.
Oh yeah.
You just, like, if this, then beep. and then you hear it, then you wait for the beep, and you're like, it didn't beep. Okay. No, now it beeped. Yay. And that is how you do it, which actually takes me back to the Apple II, because you used to do that in the Apple II, where you would, I forget what it was, but there was one character string you could put in. It was like CHR $ five or something like that. Control. Was that Control G? E? I don't know. Maybe it was seven. And that was the beep character. And it was a ASCII character.
I remember that.
That just made the Apple II beep. And that was the same thing. Now in AppleScript, you just type beep. It does it.
Right.
But,
right.
you know, it's like, oh, debuggering. This is for people who, yeah, that's bad debugging.
There are a lot of people out there who make their living doing this, listening to this, thinking these guys are amateurs.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is hello to all of our professional listeners, because we are fumbling around in the dark like that. But although I don't know, the more software developers I know, the more that they just do this on a larger scale.
right. Yeah, no.
It's the same. But I do, in AppleScript, there's a lot of beeps and there's a lot of display dialogue.
Yeah,
where it's literally like, I don't know what this variable is. Can you just put up a dialog box containing the contents of the variable so I can see what it is at this point? Which, again, Script Debugger actually lets you set breakpoints, and it's actually like a debugger, which Script Editor is not. But
yeah.
Anyway, it's a funny world. But I got an app that I've used for 25 years to make a feature change in a day, which is insane. So thank you to them, unnamed for now, because it's sort of a secret feature. It's an undocumented feature, but if I can get it to work, that will be super awesome. And maybe then they'll have a feature there. I never really thought of it before. I'm like, ooh, what if I could get a script to direct this where it needs to go? And maybe if I can figure out how to write that script, apparently the hooks are there. So we'll see. Anyway, that kind of covers what I was saying about the Mac automation schism piece that I wrote this week. It's basically like changes in the air, right? And I'm actually okay with it. There was a back and forth on Twitter this week where Brent Simmons wrote a really good piece about the importance of user automation, and our friend Daniel Jalkut sort of mischaracterized it as being like the Mac does this and iOS doesn't. And I kind of called him on it, and I said, well, that's not really constructive, and also iOS does a lot of those things. My larger point, and he apologized, it was fine, but my larger point was I'm a lot less concerned about saving AppleScript or Apple events as I am losing the ability to control apps and do user automation on Apple's platforms. That's the important part. And if the mechanisms, like, because the idea, Brent was like saying Apple events are great, and it's like Apple events are great. They were invented in 1990 for System 7. URL schemes, which is what's used on iOS, are inelegant, but they work.
Yeah.
I hope Apple makes something new. But the most important thing is that on these platforms going forward, as we move forward into new versions, that we have the ability to automate apps on the platforms. And that to me is number one. Like, it doesn't have to be brand X or brand Y. It just needs to be something that we can use. And if I have to learn a completely new mechanism, like I've had to learn how to do shortcuts, like, I'm fine with that. I just want there to be something. I don't care what it is.
And it's one of the things where it, as much as it is essential, it's also a feature that 80% of people will never use.
90%, like, maybe?
Maybe 90, yeah. I mean, how many people... the amount of Apple scripts I've actually used on my computer in the 30 odd years I've been using a Mac is pretty low.
Sure.
Like, they're critical when I do.
And Apple events also lets apps talk to each other, which is another thing that happens.
All these things are very good. And like, they are, I'm not trying to discount their usefulness, but I am saying that, like, it's nice that they're investing this time in something that I think is important to have, but is also a feature that a lot of times would feel like it might get knocked off because it's not something that's in use by the general public.
Well, that's always why
AppleScript has always had that as a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, we do live in a world where Apple seems to have embraced the idea that there are pros and power users who use the Mac, and that's what it's there for, and that they shouldn't ignore them like they were for a while. And that's encouraging. I would also say that the fact that the Shortcuts team on iOS is inside the Siri group, is my understanding, or is definitely bought by the Siri group, if it's still there. I think it is. But that actually makes me think that the Shortcuts and inter-app communication and stuff like that is going to remain a priority in iOS and Apple development, because that's how you get Siri and Siri Shortcuts to do more things, which I think opens the door a little bit for more users, is if you can ask Siri to do something on your phone or your iPad or your Mac, and it does it, and it can use your apps to do it. That's powerful. Most people, and the way Apple has built this and rolled it out last June is really instructive, which is there's Siri Shortcuts, which is like prefab. Everything is already like embedded in the apps. It's not a all you're doing is saying, I want to ask Siri to do this thing. And then there's the Shortcuts app, which is the development tool essentially to build those things. And most people will never use that app, but they may use the fruits of that. And that's good. I think that's good for user automation because the tools exist. And I think it's good to try and get the fruits of user automation to users who are not going to build the automation themselves. Well, and having that robust environment lets you do that.
It's a good sort of enticement too, right? Because it's like someone will start out trying Siri Shortcuts and be like, oh, this doesn't quite do what I want to do. Or wouldn't it be cool if I could do this? And then when they discover, oh, there's, you know, a whole app that lets me design things that are more complex, you have the ability to sort of bring people over to that too. It's like an introductory thing. Like, you could be fine. You could use Siri Shortcuts and never go to the Shortcuts app and still get a lot done. But like, for the people who are then like curious or like want to explore further, there's like a two-tiered approach almost. So I appreciate that a lot. I don't use Shortcuts that much. I gotta be honest. I've built a bunch that I just find mostly not to be that useful, because I feel like I always, like, complexity wise, I'm always looking for something that you just can't do because of the fact that you have to do just like the static input for the Siri Shortcuts. Like, you can't make a Siri Shortcut that has like a variable in it, right? Like, where you say something and it changes the shortcut based on like what your query was or what your statement was. It's literally just matching an exact phrase. And yeah, I always want to do things that are slightly more complex than that. And I think they'll get there.
Maybe this year, right? I mean, I was talking to Matthew Casanelli, who actually used to work on Shortcuts, and I had lunch with him, and you talked to him the same day. He was on Clockwise this week. I had lunch with him on Wednesday. He was talking about it. We were sort of spitballing ideas, and one of them is that big thing, which is like flexibility, placeholders, variables, that kind of thing, where you want to be able to say, you know, do this thing to this, right? Like, to this X, and like, you take that input and you use it in the workflow. And it's just not there yet. And it's not surprising, right? It's early days.
It's complex. That's hard stuff.
The possibilities there are really amazing to make Siri better as a controller of your stuff in your life. And I feel like the user automation story is always going to be a tiny fragment of users are going to build them. A slightly larger fragment of users are going to take what other people have built and modify them for their own uses. And then there's this big gulf, which is like, can we get another 10 or 20% of users to essentially just pick these things off the shelf or have them integrated into the system in a way where if you say, you know, can I do this thing? Siri says, yes, you can, you know, and let's set it up. And that's the dream, is that what you want to do is not have everybody building user automation, but you want to have people be able to use it to make their lives easier. And that's the rolling out something that somebody else built. And that's the challenge. That's the big challenge of automation, always has been.
Yep, I agree. I think that's, and I don't build that many like shortcuts that I end up using that much, but I do like looking at other people's shortcuts that they've built to try, especially Federico's, because Federico's are just bananas. But like, I just like seeing what they've managed to make it do with what seems like a fairly limited tool, but they've really found ways to expand and complexify what they have to work
for
with.
Sure.
And it's super impressive. And then you think about what they could do if you added some of those other more powerful abilities, and you're like, oh my gosh, this could be that could just be wild, like the amount of stuff that you could get done.
Since I put in the time to build those shortcuts that let me basically post things into our CMS from my iPad, I use those all the time. Basically, I built my own blogging engine or blogging client, I guess, into the text editor that I use on iOS. And then I also have that shortcut that lets me post links to our, you know, to podcasts. Mm-hmm. And like, I use those all the time now. And it's great. So, and that's a case where it was kind of an interesting exploration, but also it led to something that has saved me a lot of time, because instead of going to the CMS webpage and pasting things in and all of that, I do a keyboard shortcut and a tap, and I, you know, and then my piece is in the CMS. It's pretty great.
Look at all the things that we can do.
Oh, the things that we can do. Before we go, the Apple financials, is there anything we should mention about Apple's results? Apple primed the pump with scary iPhone sales, so now everybody's like, all right, it's that's fine.
Well, you and I both wrote columns on this week, and I only cursed you a little bit because I went in thinking about a column idea, and then you were like, oh, here are five things to pull out of this. I'm like, Jason, do you have to take all five of the things?
Well, you know.
It's, but I sort of built on those in a different direction. But I think the things that both that jumped out to both of us include the iPhone is kind of getting its feet back under itself, or at least the end of the quarter was not as bad as it was last year. So that's an interesting trajectory, and it will be interesting to see how any iOS/iPhone announcements in the next couple quarters come out to play. And then the one that I think that we and a lot of people seized on because it wasn't that it was once, it was twice, was them throwing Intel under the bus, which I think was a fascinating, and it's not the kind of thing that you say, even if it's true, unless you're trying to make a point. And to me, that is just maybe a shot across the bow is like the most generous way of putting it. But to me, it really read like we are pissed because the idea that you would have to essentially, get your product stymied because of matters that are totally outside of your control is something that is a deep-seated Apple like not exactly fear, but like just a thing that they really don't like. And it makes me wonder how close they are to sort of being able to walk away from Intel. And I, part of it is like, I sort of added into that in the Macworld column I wrote this week. I wondered if there was also just sort of a little bit of a latent anger over the whole 5G situation and the fact that Intel was really not like Intel was kind of there. Well, maybe we can get enough stuff from Intel to stopgap us until we're ready to develop our own 5G modems. And of course, they ended up having to settle with Qualcomm. Intel couldn't do it in the time, probably. And then Intel just closed up its shop for 5G as well. And part of me wondered if there was some like latent resentment over, okay, and you not only could you not deliver processors for us to make our Macs, but you also kind of made us go back to the table with Qualcomm, pay them a crap ton of money, and have to negotiate an entire like license settlement, which we also aren't like we're glad that we have it, but we really didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
So I can't think that Intel Apple relationships are at a high point right now.
No. This is. I saw somebody said on Twitter that I think to Gruber, and he retweeted it, that Dell that they work in they're like IT for a company that uses Dells, and that Dell was having huge delays too because Intel wasn't supplying the right, you know, processors at speed, which is a broader Intel problem. But I think what is telling to me is that Apple didn't sugarcoat it. Apple basically said we had a shortfall because of it. They didn't say Intel, but we had a shortfall because of Intel. Like the sales would have been up, but we couldn't ship enough systems because our supplier, who is Intel, failed us. And that is the sign of a relationship where that's over to me. Right. That's a sign that they're not trying to get on Intel's good side at all at this point.
If you look at a comparison where, you look at someplace else, for example, iPhone sales in China, Tim and Luca both give this like, oh, well, we think there's four things going on here. And they went through and they enumerated all four. It kind of diffuses responsibility. Whereas if there's the processor shortfall, the only one company makes processors for Macs. You cannot, like, there is no way to, calling it thinly veiled, I think, as I said in my column, is overstating its opacity. Like, that was a clear shot. So very clearly to me, I agree with you. It's like, the most charitable conclusion is it's the beginning of the end. I just wonder how far past the beginning we are.
Yeah, I think it's, I feel at this point Apple has the walk away money, so to speak. Apple, this makes me think actually that Apple's intent to switch off of Intel processors is going to happen sooner rather than later.
Agreed.
Because this feels to me like Apple, not only is it a reason to leave Intel, which is that they're hurting your sales by not shipping their chips fast enough, but it also is we're not afraid to talk about it because what are they going to do? What are they going to do to us? Because we don't. We're leaving them, and they're. And I gotta say too, this is not a scope of this podcast, but like, boy, Intel. Whew. It's bad. I mean, I know they have a new CEO now, but it's like, well, it's not, not, it's rough. It's rough. Yeah. That was a company that was like the tops, that blue chip of Silicon Valley. And they are really bumbling, fumbling, stumbling. It's not good. It's not good.
Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah. So I'm curious. I mean, in light of WWC coming up in about a month, who knows if it's that soon, but like there potentially could be something big to come out of that. And, I'm very intrigued to see where that goes, because I think that is we've been talking a lot about the future of the platform, and I think that is a big chunk of it. And, you know, I'm super interested. I'm very interested.
Yeah, this is going to be, I keep saying it, and I'm just going to keep saying it, which is, we are entering now the most interesting period in the development of the Mac since the OS X transition. I think it's way more interesting even than the Intel. The Intel transition was pretty smooth, but that was a big transition. But like, this feels more like the OS X transition to me, where it's like, it's a software transition and a chip transition probably happening simultaneously. Right. Like, whew, that is... Apple's done chip transitions before, and they've done software transitions before, but it feels like this is basically both happening together over a 3-year span. It's going to be, the Mac's not going to be the same, and that's interesting. We'll see what happens. I'm not saying it's good, not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it is. That's what's going to happen. So,
Yep.
All right. Well, I thought about going and seeing Avengers Endgame again today, but I don't know if I'm going to do that because I got a podcast about it tomorrow. But and you did a podcast about it yesterday, but no spoilers. Thanks to everybody for subscribing to Six Colors. I appreciate it, and I know Dan appreciates it too, don't you, Dan?
I do. I hugely appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you're keeping the lights on. That's why we're here. So thank you, and until next time, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.